Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Kempire is brought to you by...
The Kempire After Dark is back, but it's now the villain era. Yes, we are coming to Philadelphia on July 10th at City Winery. Then we're hitting Atlanta on August 5th, DC on August 22nd, then back here in New York City on September 12th. All shows have meet and greets, but a lot of people asking, what can we expect from the Kempire After Dark, the villain era? Well, Kempire After Dark, if you came to those shows, were already a night of hot topics, spilling tea, seeing a whole other side of me. So you can only imagine what the villain era is going to bring out. I'm so excited to bring to you a night of not just hot topics, but us recapping some of your favorite shows from Real Housewives of Atlanta to Real Housewives of Miami, but also talking about Tyler Perry, the Diddler, and so much more. Can't wait to see all of you in Philly, Atlanta, DC, and New York. The New York City show has a special live stream option, so even if you're coming to these shows or if you're not because you're in another city, that is your option. I'll see you guys this summer in a city near you.
You're listening to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network.
And again, this is why it's important that you're listening to the podcast and not just following us on TikTok or YouTube, because this is where I'll give you updates and extended versions of what we're talking about here on YouTube or TikTok or Instagram. We were live multiple times on Monday. You know, we had Real Housewives of Atlanta, a break from them this week. Their part one of their reunion will be airing. So we will be recapping that on Monday, but we had a Monday and I thought, oh, I have a little bit of some free time. And then we were live at like three different times talking about Tyler Perry. No update in regards to the Tyler Perry story of it all. I did see that Braxton Wells did go back on his Instagram. I haven't checked it today. He did go back on his Instagram saying that he was receiving threats and things like that, allegedly going to leave the country. I don't know. I'm going to continue to follow that story. If you missed it, you can hear it here on the podcast, but you can also see it on our YouTube channel, Kempire, as well. But the Diddy of it all, I do have an update in regards to that. But first, let me just remind you what we were talking about this week when it comes to the jury and possible issues with one of the alternates maybe not being or misrepresenting his history when jury selection was happening. Again, he was an alternate. He was not a part of the actual deliberations. But I did find his behavior afterwards. He's the only one of the jury to speak out so far in regards to doing an interview. One of the actual jurors that deliberated did send a statement to the news outlets because people were claiming that the jury were mesmerized by Diddy's popularity and celebrity. And they were like, that's not it at all. Did one of the jurors misrepresent themselves to get on the Sean Diddy Combs jury? Possibly. Also, you may recall we did a video the other day talking about the juror speaking out on CNN and saying after they saw Dawn Richard's testimony, the other jurors found her to be unbelievable. And I told you, first of all, you guys are not even allowed to talk about this case. So it made me wonder, when exactly did you guys have that conversation? It's also important to note he's an alternate, so he wasn't a part of the jury deliberations. I don't know what this could mean for Diddy and this trial or an investigation, but we need to talk about it. So today is the day where Diddy will be back in court for a hearing because he would like for his sentencing to be expedited. When we first reported on the bail hearing that they had when the verdict was read, the judge had decided that the sentencing would happen on October 3rd. Obviously, Diddy would like to get out of jail. His bail was denied yet again because the judge over this case, Aaron Submaranian, said that you guys said during this entire case that he definitely committed domestic violence. Domestic violence is violence. So he is still a threat to society. Diddy remains in detention. The other day when we spoke about one of the jurors doing an interview on CNN, the juror had some interesting things to say about Dawn Richard's testimony. Remember, Dawn Richard's testimony was weeks ago. Here's the interesting thing that he said.
Were there any witnesses that made you think, I don't believe this?
There was one that I think, unanimously, we kind of all said, like, wow. Like, it was almost like watching, like, TV. Mm. It was like...
So what exactly does he mean when he says we unanimously rejected Dawn Richard's testimony? You're not supposed to, part of the instructions, you're not supposed to, as a jury, discuss this matter at all. The first time that the jury, mind you, he is an alternate, so he wasn't even part of deliberations. The first time that they're able to freely talk about this case is during deliberations. This stood out to me when we first talked about it. I was like, what do you mean unanimously? You guys all were sort of like, you didn't believe Dawn Richard. You shouldn't be talking about the case.
It's their way as well.
Were there any witnesses that made you think, I don't believe this?
There was one that I think, unanimously, we kind of all said, like, wow. Like, it was almost like watching, like, TV. Mm. It was like, you know, like when I think her name was Dawn Richard, that one.
Mm-hmm.
When she, on cross-examination, I mean, I never saw her. Such a cross-examination. It was very impressive to watch.
What was it about it?
I think just how the defense, you know, got into her and really made her, you know, look very not credible. I mean, I even wrote in my notebook that it was like a takedown.
Really?
Yeah.
And that was pretty early on.
And at this particular point, this man is the only juror to do an interview and come out publicly as one of the jurors from the Sean Diddy Combs trial. But that stood out to me when we first talked about a piece of this interview that he did with CNN. Clearly, it was like he was ready to do whatever he could to be on this jury. Our friends over at Inner City Press are also highlighting some other discrepancies amongst this jury.
Okay, here we are. Matthew Russell Lee, Inner City Press, here at the Southern District of New York Courthouse. Today, it's Tuesday, July 8th. Now, on the U.S. versus Sean Diddy Combs, after his two convictions with three not guilties, today at 2 p.m., there is a hearing on expediting his sentencing. His bail was denied, but the judge seems committed to move his sentencing up from October 3rd, and I'm assuming that Mark Agnifilo and his other lawyers will be asking for time served when the time comes. Now, meanwhile, so we'll be doing that at 2. Instead of it being by phone, which it could have been since it's virtual for the lawyers, it'll be in the courthouse. But so will we be. There it is right there, the courthouse. But there's been a development. Early in the trial, in the first week, in fact, before the trial's testimony and even opening statements began, during jury selection, we noticed that one of the prospective jurors said he worked at the U.S. office, the U.N. Office of Counterterrorism. And then he was asked, does that mean you work in any way with U.S. law enforcement? And he said, no. Now, I used to cover the United Nations. In fact, I still do. I write scoops daily about it. But I report on it pretty aggressively. Anyway, I know that office, and they do work with U.S. law enforcement. So it just sort of stuck in my craw that why would this juror be misrepresenting?
But also, shouldn't the prosecution know a piece of that information or have that awareness as well? Just saying.
On the second day, they asked him more about it because it wasn't credible. He said, no, we work with... only with Interpol and something about the Dushanbe process. Okay, didn't think more about him because he's just an alternate. And he knew he was an alternate. Only one alternate actually made the transition to being on the jury. That was alternate one, who took the place of juror number 6, who was ousted for misrepresenting, according to the judge, where he lived and the credibility issues raised thereby. Now, alternate 6 went on CNN right after the verdict. And he said, first he said he didn't, he, he, he inflated his importance by saying, no one told us who were the jurors or who were the alternates. That's totally false. He was there. I was there. Anyone that covered the trial heard them say, you are alternate six. Fine. Then he said that the video...
It sounds like this juror has a problem with being clear and telling the truth, based on what I'm seeing here.
That no one saw except the jurors and alternates at the time. He said, you know, they were riveting, but also kind of tame. Now, the question was put to him, he said, you know, the prosecution showed videos of Cassie just sitting around. The interviewer then said, well, you mean the defense? He said, oh, yeah, the defense. So then he went out of his way to mention 350 pages of notes, which, to me, call me a cynic, I believe alternate six misrepresented to get on the jury, as we reported at the time. And as soon as it was over, somehow was contacted by or contacted CNN to mention his copious notes, possibly to sell a book. Sell a book. I mean, who am I to say? Who am I to say except to say it's extraordinary to me that this UN... Anyway, we'll have more on this. We've written a story. You can find it.
And shout out to our friends over at Inner City Press. They were covering this story the entire trial as well. Megan Kuna, who's also a journalist, posted in the comments section saying, I wish CNN had followed up with the juror when he said everyone agreed about Richard's cross. As you said, they weren't supposed to be discussing the case. In the comments section, a person says, Megan, in your experience following cases, is it normal for juries to not understand jury charge or judge's instructions? Megan says, I don't know if it's normal, but certainly happens. I covered a trial in Spokane years ago where the jury acquitted, then polling revealed that they were actually split on a guilty verdict, guilty versus not guilty. But they thought if they couldn't decide, it was an automatic NG, not guilty, ended in a mistrial. I don't know if this either hurts the defense or helps the defense. I think this actually helps the defense in a way. If they would like to appeal this, we talked about this with Kirsten Brown a couple of times in regards to why the defense had been trying to trigger a mistrial. It was actually because when they decide to appeal the counts where he was charged, they could use that, specifically when they wrote that 14-page motion to the judge about the issue with juror number six. So it will be interesting to see whether or not any of this gains legs. Again, we have to keep in mind, this particular juror was an alternate. He was not a part of the deliberations. But there is a concern here that, again, you may recall when the judge gave the marching orders to the actual jury that did the deliberations. He says, remember, what happens in the jury room stays in the jury room. That's not necessarily true. Juries are able to do interviews, as you saw, after this. But none of the actual jurors that were a part of the verdict have done an interview. They did speak out anonymously in a statement. I can play you that audio as well from the news report.
Morning, a juror from the Sean Diddy Combs trial requesting to remain anonymous, slamming the notion that the music mogul's celebrity profile drove their decision. In a statement to ABC News saying, I found that statement highly insulting and belittling to the jury and the deliberation process, adding, our decision was based solely on the evidence presented and how the law stated we would have treated any defendant in the same manner, regardless of who they are. The jury of eight men and four women acquitted the rap titan of the most severe charges of sex trafficking and racketeering, but convicted him on two counts of transportation to engage in prostitution as it relates to ex-girlfriends Cassie Ventura and the woman who testified under the pseudonym Jane.
We shall see if this matters. Based on what we've seen so far from the actual jury, they've been very, really respectful. Could they be working on other interviews or deals or whatever it may be? Possibly. But based on that statement, it seems as if the actual jury has a lot more integrity than the alternate that we saw on CNN. Guys, I want to know your reaction to what this juror had to say and what our friends over at Inner City Press are saying in regards to some misrepresentation during jury selection. Will it matter? Does it matter? Well, since we did that video, more information has come out, including the sentencing update. As you know, as I mentioned in the video, the judge set a sentencing date for Diddy for October 3rd. However, they seem to have been able to move it up, not a lot, maybe a couple of weeks, and now looking at September 22nd. But journalist Megan Kuhn, if you know that name, she's covered a lot of the most recent hip-hop trials, including the Diddy one. She wrote this on her website, legalaffairsandtrials.com, and she explains what we could probably expect Diddy will end up getting when he's sentenced. She says, Sean Diddy Combs will be sentenced on October 3rd after his lawyers on Tuesday abandoned their request to expedite the hearing. So that's important to note. The 55-year-old rapper will remain at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn because U.S. District Judge Aaron Subramanian rejected his bail request last week. Combs' lawyers requested a September 22nd sentencing in a joint letter with prosecutors filed early Tuesday, but they filed another later in the morning that requested the original October 3rd date. Prosecutors in the U.S. Probation Office, which will evaluate Combs and makes its own sentencing recommendation, didn't object. Judge Subramanian authorized the schedule following a short phone hearing in which his deputy clerk said that he responded to the scheduling request in writing. Combs faces up to 10 years in prison for each of his two convictions for interstate transportation for the purpose of prostitution, but prosecutors say their preliminary calculation of his standard range under U.S. Sentencing Commission guidelines is 51 to 63 months. His lawyers say it's 21 to 27 months. So that's what Diddy's defense is saying he should get, between 21 and 27 months. I don't know if there's any report on them appealing those particular charges that he was convicted of. Of course, they're happy that he was not convicted on the sex trafficking or the racketeering charges, because those had a life in prison sentencing. Prosecutors didn't include in it their 51 to 63 month calculation, but they said that they plan to seek a 4-point enhancement in Combs' offense level, which is a key component of federal sentencing for offenses involving fraud or coercion. If Judge Subramanian agrees, that would increase Combs' standard range to 78 to 97 months in prison, which is 6 years and 6 months to slightly more than 8 years. Prosecutors also indicated they may seek other enhancements because they haven't, quote, had adequate time to carefully consider all potentially applicable guidelines provisions. The defense's sentencing position is due September 19th, and prosecutors are to file their position on September 26th. Prosecutors detailed their preliminary 51 to 63-month range in a filing last week that argued against Combs' bail request, and they said that it would increase because evidence related to the convictions, quote, overlaps substantially with evidence related to the sex trafficking counts. That's interesting. Prosecutors cite a U.S. Sentencing Commission guideline that was amended in November of 2024 exclude acquitted conduct from being considered relevant conduct at sentencing. Prosecutors emphasize in trial that interstate transportation for prostitution is illegal even if everyone involved consents. But jurors had no way of indicating on the verdict sheet if they believe the commercial sex acts as the center of the transportation acts were consensual. The acquittal on the trafficking by force, fraud, or coercion charges indicates the jury agreed it was, but that it isn't enough to stop prosecutors from seeking more prison time for the transportation convictions because Combs used fraud or coercion to commit the crimes. So this goes back to what we were talking about with Kirsten Browns in regards to what the prosecution was fighting for in the jury instructions. And that's why it's so important, because at the end of the day, I know it seems like to us as laymen that it's clear cut, like he did it and he should face all of this time in jail. But if those instructions are not included, it makes it harder for the jury to come to the verdict that, you know, a lot of people thought that he should have been facing. Prosecutors' 8-page filing last week cites the overlapping evidence on the trafficking and transportation charges when arguing that much of this conduct is not included in the guidelines definition of acquitted conduct and may be relevant to the guidelines calculation. They warned, however, the government requires additional time to consider any potential enhancements or cross-references that may be applicable. Michael Friedman, a criminal defense attorney in Los Angeles, said that the new amendment and the prosecutor's enhancement argument sets the stage for an unusual sentencing decision for Judge Subramanian that will be ripe for appeal. So they're already thinking that whatever he decides could be a potential legal battle. This is an avant-garde federal sentencing litigation, Freeman said. Freeman said that prosecutors are going to act as if they won and he did everything that they said he did. And I think a lot of people, and this would be another question for Kirsten, in regards to would the prosecution consider this a win? I'm thinking that no, this was a major loss for them because the major charges where he was facing life is a big loss for them. If they had won just that charge, then I think that would have been considered a big win for them. That's why you see Diddy's attorney celebrating the way that they were celebrating. So they said that these are novel amendments, so this is just going to be fodder for appeal, he said. When explaining the 51 to 63 month range, prosecutors said evidence at trial showed Combs transported seven escorts across state lines for paid sex. So even setting aside Miss Ventura and Jane Combs, Combs's offense level must increase by maximum allowed for a number of victims, which is five, and would put him at 19 instead of 14. Prosecutors are putting him in the lowest criminal history category, and the offense level increase alone raises his standard prison sentence from 15 to 21 months to 30 to 37 months. However, they also say that Combs deserves more time in prison because he obstructed justice and was a manager or supervisor and the criminal activity was otherwise extensive. They cite his use of the services of many of his employees, including his chief of staff, Christina Curram, his travel advisor, his security staff, and his assistants in order to carry out the offenses of conviction. It would be interesting to see where the judge agrees or disagrees with the prosecution, because it does seem like they're trying to utilize the things that he was acquitted of in trying to get the maximum sentence when it comes to the charges that he was actually convicted of. Again, this would be a great conversation to ask Kirsten in regards to what they're trying to do here. So they said the jury's acquittal on the racketeering conspiracy count rejected prosecutors' argument that Curram and the security staff were knowing co-conspirators. But prosecutors said that even if all of those employees were, quote, unknowing participants, their years-long assistance in facilitating the criminal activity satisfies the criteria for this enhancement. According to prosecutors, Combs' obstructive acts include trying to bribe security after he assaulted Ventura at the Intercontinental Hotel in Los Angeles in 2016, and after Ventura sued him, calling his former girlfriend who testified in trial under the pseudonym Jane. Combs secretly recorded the calls, and the prosecutors used the recordings as evidence in the trial. They said in their filing last week that Combs attempted to feed Jane a false narrative regarding her participation in hotel nights to silence Jane and prevent the law enforcement investigation into the conduct. The conduct encompasses the conduct underlying the prostitution charges that gave rise to this case. And then Megan provides the sentencing table that sort of breaks up the criminal history category, criminal history points. So this is where it gets above our pay grade in understanding how they come to determine someone's sentence or the guidelines. And it's very interesting, and maybe I'll post this on our community tab on YouTube for you guys to see it. But she says prosecutors factored those enhancements into their 51 to 63 month calculation at an offense level of 24. But they didn't include the 4-point enhancement they said they plan to seek for offenses involving fraud or coercion. With that, his offense level jumps to 28.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
And its final standard range is at least 6 years and six months to slightly more than 8 years. Combs's lawyer's 21 to 27 month calculation is based on an offense level of 16. So what you'll see if you look at the sentencing table, there's the offense level, then they have it like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in regards to criminal history category. And then across the category shows you the amount of time. Okay, and it then says, this is the U.S. Sentencing Commission table that will guide Combs's prison sentence. Prosecutors and the defense agree he's in the first criminal history category, but they disagree on his offense level. So his offense level, they break it up in zone A, which is 1 to 8, zone B, which is 9 to 11, zone C, which is 12 to 13, and then zone D, which goes from 14, the offense level from 14 to 43. Makes me wonder, again, I'm going to send this to Kirsten to hear her perspective, and I'll get back to you guys, and maybe we'll do another video, because I do want to hear her reaction to everything that's played out. So they continue in Megan's report that they agree that his, okay, so the base level is 14, but they said that it should increase only 2 levels for the number of victims, which they said is 2 for Ventura and Jane. They did not mention the escorts prosecutors named in their filing. They also said that while they fully respect Combs' sentencing exposure and do not seek to minimize in any way, but it is in fact low. Judge Subramanian indicated during last week's bail hearing that he's sympathetic to the prosecutor's arguments and could sentence Combs harshly. He immediately announced his decision to keep Combs in custody, then explained his reasoning by citing the defense's statements and closing arguments about Combs' violence. The judge also said the prosecutors presented evidence that Combs engaged in a years-long pattern of abuse and violence, including as recently as in June of 2024. He emphasized Combs' violence continued while he was under investigation, including the June 2024 assault of Jane, in which prosecutors had photos of her bruises as evidence. Now the court takes no position on what evidence or conduct will be relevant to the defendant's sentence on the crimes of conviction, said Subramanian, a 2023 Joe Biden appointee who spent his pre-bench career in bankruptcy and commercial law at Susan Codfey LLP in New York City. But for present purposes, the defendant is unable to meet his burden to show by clear and convincing evidence the lack of danger to any person or the community, given the evidence admitted at trial. So he's basically saying that you admitted that you were a violent person. Remember, and this is why I say no one can say Diddy's an innocent man based off this trial. You can say he's innocent of the charges he was not convicted of, but he's still a criminal that not only used drugs, gave people drugs, his staff drugs, abused, physically assaulted girlfriends, okay? So Friedman, who represented baseball star Shohei Ohtani, former interpreter Ipe Mizuhara, I apologize in advance for the mispronunciation, in his wire fraud embezzlement case last year, and said that the judge, quote, has tremendous discretion. Kirsten said that to me as well when we were talking about the sentencing. But the recent prohibition on the consideration of acquitted conduct means the defense has a lot easier terrain for an appeal. So then there's that battle. Overall, the defense won the trial because because the jury acquitted on the racketeering and trafficking charges. So their sentencing position is going to be far more, I think, tethered to reality in that regard. Most of what he was charged with fizzled out and he was not convicted, and what you're left with is a much narrower set of counts of conviction with a much smaller offense level and fewer enhancements and a lower guidelines range, Friedman said. It's somewhat risky, I suppose, for the judge to start doing this guidelines analysis based on the evidence that he heard at trial, because he wasn't convicted of a lot of this. You can't escape that he literally got acquitted on these charges, Friedman continued. He says that that's what I mean by sort of avant-garde. It's out there in part because it's aggressive, fine, but it is also very untested, and so it's novel, and I think therefore risky. And one thing I will say about Judge Sumerini, what we've seen over these last couple of months, he's not someone that's risky. He seems like he's very by the book, and I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised that even before October, he will already have in his mind what he's going to do. I'm sure he's doing the research. I also don't think he's going to step out on a limb when it comes to this. But again, he has free range. The U.S. Probation Office is to submit its pre-sentence investigation report, which is not publicly available, by August 29th, and Combs' lawyers are to file their objections by September 5th and prosecutors by September 12th. The probation office then must file its final pre-sentence report on September 18th, one day before the defense is to file its sentencing memorandum. The prosecution memo is due a week later. Post-verdict motions, which could include a motion for acquittal or a new trial, are due July 30th, and prosecutors are to respond by August 20th. So there's still more stuff that could happen. Judge Sumeranian has not yet ruled on Combs' acquittal motion under Rule 29. So I had that question, and we've talked about this before, whether or not he had made any sort of decision on that. But we already had a jury's decision, so that would be interesting. So the judge has not yet ruled on Combs' acquittal motion under Rule 29 of the Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure, which his appellate specialist, Alexander Shapiro, argued on June 24th. So yeah, so that is your update on Diddy. Let's get into some Housewives news. It looks like Real Housewives of Potomac star Kiana is back with her on-again, off-again boyfriend, wanting him to be her fiancé, Greg. You remember him. And it looks like Phaedra is throwing her hat into politics as well as Dr. Heavenly. And surprisingly enough, Dr. Contessa makes a speech at Heavenly's first public rally. This definitely has to be a scheme that Todd set up for these ladies to come to us with the BS. So before we get into politics and what's going on in the politics and reality TV space, we have to talk about Kiana Stewart. You remember Kiana? She was a friend of, at one particular point last season, she was a full-time housewife, and her relationship was a major part of her storyline. And it seemed as if Greg did not support her being on this show for a variety of different reasons. But at the reunion, he was there, never came out, probably was very annoyed about that. But the update was that they were broken up, got back together, she moved out, and surprise, surprise, she posts on social media a video of them, but you don't see his face. You see him, you know it's clearly him. So it seems as if they're back together. And it seems as if maybe she secured a full-time role again this season. But a lot of you had a strong reaction when I reposted it from our friends over at Jay's Reality Blog. I said, I hate this for us. Because clearly he doesn't want to be on the show. Clearly, I don't know about that relationship, because that relationship is actually quite concerning. It's like she's begging for a relationship with him. And you've seen Kiana. Kiana's beautiful, smart, and her business owner. She doesn't need to beg anybody for anything. But again, you like it, girl. We love it. We just hate it for us. And if we have to watch this play out for another season on The Real Housewives of Potomac. Potomac is still filming. Stay tuned for that. I can't wait to talk about that when I come back to DC this summer. We'll talk, because I'm sure there's a lot more stuff being spilled. Now let's get into Dr. Heavenly. As you know, we did a video just this week talking about Dr. Heavenly announcing that she is running for Georgia State Representative. I need to do my research on who actually is running. She's the only person that we know, because she's been on Married to Medicine for a very long time. And I told you, I said, I really hope that this is not some sort of storyline that she's utilizing. But if you saw the video that we did, it also was announced that Quad Webb was going to be our campaign manager. And a lot of you had thoughts and opinions on that. I hope that Dr. Heavenly is truly passionate about what she's doing. And for those that don't realize this, I know she talks about politics. We talk about politics too here on our channel. Does that mean I'm going to run for office? No. Does it mean that people are inspired by the recent elections to run for office? Yes. The mayoral election that we had here in New York City inspired people across the country and around the world to run for office. Doesn't mean that everyone should. Not saying I didn't see the speech that she gave at this rally, but she did have a rally that was swarming with reality TV stars, including Mama D from Love & Hip Hop. Dr. Contessa surprisingly made a speech at this event. You remember last season, Dr. Contessa and Dr. Heavenly, it seemed as if they were just not getting to the right place. Even so, mind you, we didn't even talk about this. I talked about some of the problematic things that Dr. Heavenly has said on her YouTube channel and on the show. And I said that might hurt her politically. And she can't just say, ya mama. But she even made some comments about Dr. Contessa's body at the reunion last season. And she justified it as, if you're going to come at me, I'm going to be able to respond. Okay, we can't respond that way when having a debate about people's health care and welfare and things like that. But surprisingly enough, at this event that she had on Tuesday in Georgia, Dr. Contessa made a speech. That would be interesting. I also asked a question. I don't know. I can't confirm or deny whether or not cameras were up. I'm assuming they were because they're still filming Married to Medicine. So this is why I said this feels icky because it feels like it's a storyline, but you are getting real people's money to campaign to for your campaign. So her kids were at the event. Dr. Damon Daddy was there. Okay. But all the other ladies from Married to Medicine, including Dr. Mimi was there, Dr. Simone, Dr. Jackie was there, of course. Contessa was there, Dr. Contessa, and Quad was there because that's her campaign manager. Dr. Mimi made a speech. T.S. Madison was there. I hope that this is real for her. Again, I don't know, but if I see in the next season that from the jump, this is the storyline, I already know what this is. I already know what this is. For those of you that are in Georgia, please let me know, who is she running against? Because first of all, doesn't she have to run in order to be selected as the Democratic nominee? So who is she running against in the primary? So I have questions. Unless there is no Democratic nominee and it's automatic. You guys will let me know. I know nothing about what's happening in this local election. But I do tell you, your local elections are the most important. More than people even realize, especially right now, you realize like, oh, your House of Representatives, your Senate, those local elections are part of the reason why that big, beautiful bill was passed and why those local elections are important for checks and balances. There were quite a few reality TV stars. Again, I cannot confirm or deny whether or not the Married to Medicine cameras were up at Dr. Heavenly's event. I'm assuming they are because they're still in the middle of filming this season. And based on what I've heard, I see that we have at least one new face that will be a part of the season. So that will be interesting. And she's not a doctor. She's a nurse. So they're taking your advice. Remember, a lot of you kept on saying that during our Married to Medicine recaps last year. Well, this year. No, last year. I can't remember. I can't keep up. Let's get into Phaedra Parks. Speaking of politics, Phaedra Parks was on The View looking good. Let's start off with the good stuff. She looks good. I like the little short bob. I like the outfit. Fine, let's start off with that. So she's talking about feeling like she was set up. She was framed this season when it comes to the Angela and the Marcus of it all. I don't know if I believe that, but okay. But she also talks about running for political office. Let's take a listen to what Phaedra had to say on The View this week.
And on the season finale, you were essentially accused of orchestrating a scheme to spread a rumor that Angela's husband, Charles, had cheated on her. Oh. But we've gotten a little more information since then, and there's some speculation that you were essentially framed. So what is the truth here?
I was definitely framed. Oh. Like, I mean, but...
By one of the housewives?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But it comes out all on Twitter, you know.
Pause. Again, it could be that. And I'm not going to sit here and act as if Angela at the very beginning of the season wasn't looking like she was producing when it comes to some of the storylines that were happening between Portia and Drew. However, why would Angela come for Phaedra? And I said this during our recap. I said, I thought it was so interesting, Phaedra's initial response, again, looking up in the air, but then immediately coming to, let's talk about those foreclosures. So she was clearly digging up information on Angela. Based on how Angela's moved this season, I can't say 100% that Angela would start coming for Phaedra. I can't. Production? Maybe. But something's not clean in this situation.
It's everywhere. But, you know, the thing about this platform is huge. And you can use it for good or bad. And I've had wonderful times.
She should talk.
Times, and not everyone is as booked and busy as I am. So, yeah. You know, I've got lots of jobs. So I'm working, and I'm usually trying to be pretty productive. But
here's the other thing about she loves to claim that she's booked and busy. There's a study that talks about multitasking and how multitasking actually is not the smarter way of doing something. Just because you're booked and busy and have many jobs doesn't mean that you do those jobs at your highest capability or do them well. Just want to point that out.
But, you know, the people who need more attention definitely bring the antics.
Mm. Oh, I love that shade. Jealousy, I love it. Yes. No, part one of the reunion airs this Sunday. Yes, what can we expect?
Well, you know, with any housewives, it's going to be drama, crying, laughing. But it's must-see TV, but at the same time, it's definitely hard to sit on that couch.
Mm, yeah.
The couch is hot.
And you're also a Reiki healer?
Yes, ma'am.
So what's next? Is there a career you haven't tried?
You know what? My favorite thing is politics.
Oh.
And when I went to law school, I always thought I was going to be the insurance commissioner because Geico put me through undergrad and law school. So I just knew, I was like, I'm going to be the insurance commissioner. But obviously that didn't happen. But I love politics. That's why I love this show. And when you see stuff like the Big Beautiful Bill and Medicaid and all these things that affect the most vulnerable in our society being passed, I feel like I almost have a duty at some point to, you know,
you're going to run at some point?
You're going to run. Yeah.
Good.
I think you'd be successful.
Yes. Yeah.
I can see it now.
Yeah. I mean, if she can do what she did on Traitors, yes. I mean, you're going to be phenomenal.
Here's the thing with Phaedra. There's a lot of stuff that has happened with Phaedra on reality television that could hurt her taking political office. And before you guys say it, because a lot of you won't even get this far and you already be in the comment section, well, if DT can be president, Phaedra can run for political office, or Dr. Heavenly can run for political office.
Hell no.
I said this before, I'm going to say it again. Let's not normalize that. Let's not normalize people that are inexperienced or have their own shady past. Let's not forget. And I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again because I know some of you are tired of, oh, here y'all go bringing up the candy of it all. And yes, Candy, I saw the post that you and Shamia liked as well in regards to Diddy. Saw that. But here's the thing. And I said that Phaedra herself could have nipped this in the bud. And we were just talking about this the other day when she did the Hollywood Unlocked Jason Lee interview. And she still refuses to take accountability. All it would take for Phaedra to actually move on and for the audience and for people that in the future that say she did run for political office. Because please understand, yes, reality television will bring up your dirty laundry, but politics is going to bring up your dirty laundry, lay it all out for the entire world to see, including your ex-husband being locked up. It should be noted she was never convicted. She was never charged. But there are accusations that she may have had involvement, allegedly. You remember Angela Stanton in that book, that PDF that was on Amazon? Y'all remember that? The candy accusation, accusing someone of SA and never owning it. Even Portia, you know, the frick to her frack, came out and says, remember, you apologized to me at the reunion. You apologized to me again for that lie. During the Jason Lee interview, she still showed no accountability. All it would take for Phaedra to do is say, you know what? I should have never repeated a rumor that I heard. I should have never done that. I apologize to the people that I hurt. Candy, I apologize to the audience if I hurt them as well. That, I think, at least for me, would be like leaps and bounds, accountability. But if you are going to run for political office, please understand that stuff is going to come back up. I'm not saying that Phaedra is not equipped. I'm not saying that Phaedra is not well-versed in speaking about these things. The same with Dr. Heavily. I'm not saying that. Anyone can seek political office. So many people that were everyday people are now seeking political office because they're passionate about it. They're doing the homework in regards to that. But I honestly don't believe Dr. Heavenly, and I don't believe Phaedra Parks. I believe Phaedra Parks likes attention. She would much rather a contract with Bravo than serving her country. But again, if she does it and she's passionate about it and the candidate she's running against is not that great, I'm here for it. But I already know some of you will be like, you just hate Phaedra. You don't know these people. You don't know these people. And neither do I. I don't hate people that I don't know. What I'm going to base my opinion on is their behavior. So again, I had to include, especially for our podcast fam and for those that are listening to this on YouTube, this is an update in regards to this particular video that we did where I was telling you about Dr. Heavenly running for office. So shout out to Taria from the What Else Is Going On podcast and also Housewives from a Housewife on Instagram who posted about the Dr. Heavenly election. So Lithonia Democratic Representative Doreen Carter, who was sworn into office in 2015, so she's been in the position for 10 years, could be facing a challenge from Dr. Heavenly Kimes, a dentist and one of the stars of Married to Medicine on Bravo. The reality TV show follows the lives of Kimes and other women and medical professionals in Atlanta. So they also say numerous incumbents from both parties are set to face challengers in their party primaries in the November general election. So this is interesting. I don't know anything about Doreen Carter. Only the people that live there in Atlanta or in her district probably could give us any sort of information on how she's been as a representative. Part of me feels like, yes, if she's been a representative for 10 years, obviously people like her. Obviously, no one, she hasn't really been challenged that we know of. So, or people do like her work and she's done a good job and people still would like for her to represent them. Or maybe people are tired of Doreen and they want a new face. Is that new face going to be Dr. Heavenly? I don't know, but I am looking forward to a debate. This is not my district at all or my state, but I'm interested. I want to see a debate amongst the Democratic nominees for this position of state representative. So she will have to go through a primary, and she's going up against Doreen Carter. Again, slip me some information, Atlanta folks. I want to know how you feel about Doreen Carter, her history in Atlanta, in this particular district. Do you think that it's time for a change? And is that change Dr. Heavenly? Maybe. I'm open, and I can't wait to come to Atlanta on August 5th for our live show, because I know you guys will spill all kinds of tea then. All right. I'll see you guys in the next one.
Thanks for tuning in to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network. As always, you can hear Kempire on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. More information can be found on KempireRadio.com.
Everyone has a fave Wendy's frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new frosty swirls and frosty fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo brownie fusion, Pop-Tarts strawberry fusion, strawberry swirl, brownie batter swirl, caramel swirl, and caramel crunch fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co. LLC. Used with permission.